Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Malka Bat Simcha, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai, Pesach Vansir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Harab Meir Kahana, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, of course, this past week we had the framework, quote-unquote, for the so-called nuclear agreement with Muslim Nazi terrorist Iran. And this so-called framework is everything that we warned it would be. The agreement is everything that we warned that it would be. Iran gets to keep all 19,000 centrifuges. Iran gets to continue to develop nuclear bombs. Iran keeps all of the factories, the laboratories, the reactors, the entire nuclear infrastructure intact, and continues to develop and research and build. And Iran, in exchange, promises that they're only going to use only 5,000 out of the 19,000 centrifuges. Temporarily, they'll only use 5,000 out of the 19,000. The other 14,000, they say they're not going to use for now. They'll only use 5,000. Oh, how nice of them. As if anything they say can ever be believed. They have never kept their word in any agreement they have ever made with anyone, ever. Even in terms of their nuclear program, there have been numerous understandings and agreements which they have completely violated. They have lied and cheated before international inspectors, UN inspectors, before everybody. They have lied and cheated every step of the way. They have never told the truth on any issue at any time. The only time they tell the truth is when in Farsi, in their own language, they're speaking to their own people and they promise to destroy America and Israel. When they say death to America and death to Israel, and America's the great Satan and Israel's the great Satan, and that they promise to exterminate America and Israel and promise to exterminate the non-Muslim infidels, when they say that, that's when they're telling the truth. That's the only time they're telling the truth. And so we're faced with an unprecedented danger here. Because not only will we have these lunatics in Iran acquiring nuclear bombs, God forbid. If that happens, God forbid, then that will set off a massive Middle East arms race, a nuclear arms race. Every Muslim terrorist country in the Middle East will say, well, if Iran can have nuclear bombs, we want nuclear bombs. If Iran can have this type of deal, we want this. Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan, Syria, Turkey, Iraq will all begin a massive race to acquire nuclear bombs. You'll have a situation where 10 or 12 or 15 Muslim countries will all have nuclear bombs, God forbid. If that happens, there is no doubt that eventually those nuclear bombs are going to be used and eventually we're going to face a nuclear catastrophe. There's no doubt. You have 10 or 15 Muslim countries with nuclear bombs? You have any doubt that will lead to a nuclear catastrophe? So we're facing an unprecedented nightmare here. An unbelievable nightmare. And the only solution, of course, is military action. The U.S. Air Force or the Israeli Air Force has to go in, as we've said for 20 years now, as we've warned for 20 years. They have to go in, and from the air, they have to destroy as much of Iran's nuclear bomb-making program as possible. They still have the military capacity to destroy enough of the program to set that program back 5 or 10 years. That would give the world and would give America and Israel and other countries a chance to finally deal with this challenge. And it would be so expensive and costly to the Iranians that it could possibly lead to the collapse of their nuclear program. Completely, even in the long term, they may not really be able to begin going through all this again, if there are sanctions and they've been bombed and the program is, for all intents and purposes, 60-70% of the program has been destroyed after they invested hundreds of billions of dollars. So military action is the answer. If it's done properly and effectively and forcefully, that's the answer. That always has been the answer, as we've said for over 20 years. And so what do we do in a situation like this? Well, we in JTF, of course, we have to keep up the pressure. We have to do Hebrew and English videos and a Hebrew and English campaign to keep up the pressure and demand that action be taken. We're not allowed to be silent. We have to try to wake the people of America and Israel up before it's too late. We have no choice. And our only hope in the end may be the presidential election next year. That may be our only hope for stopping this, because Bibi Netanyahu is a coward. He's a bluffer. He's never going to do what has... I do not believe he's going to do what has to be done. I don't believe it. And so, I mean, even now he's saying, we need a better agreement than this. This is a bad deal. We need a better deal. A better deal? You mean you can make deals and trust the Iranian Nazi mullahs who have sworn to commit genocide and perpetrate a Holocaust? You can trust these murdering, vicious beasts with something like nuclear power and nuclear and the ability to create nuclear weapons? You can trust them in a situation so dangerous? And Netanyahu's giving legitimacy to that by saying, well, we need a better deal than this. Instead of Netanyahu going in and doing what Menachem Begin did in Iraq in 1981 when he destroyed, Menachem Begin destroyed Saddam Hussein's nuclear program in Iraq in 1981. And even Ehud Olmert destroyed Assad's nuclear program in Syria in 2007. But Bibi the wimp, Bibi the coward, will not do this in the case of Iran. And so we've got to expose it. And we've got to put pressure, we've got to put the pressure on. And the only hope we may have, it may be the presidential election, is the only hope. Ted Cruz, as you know, became the first candidate to announce that he was running for the Republican nomination for president. He's the first major candidate to announce for the 2016 election. He made a brilliant announcement. And we've seen that he's really going up in the polls as a result of his announcement. I don't know if people have been following what's going on, but it's amazing. Baruch Hashem, thank God, he's gone from 3 or 4% in the polls. He was really at the bottom. He was only getting 3 or 4% in the polls. No one was taking him seriously. Now there are polls showing him in second or third place, nationally. In some national polls, he's in second or third place. And in the early states, which are very important for momentum, and you know, that's the, you have to win those early states to get the nomination. In the early states, like Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, those are the first four contests. The polls show him doing very well. They show him in second place, in third place. A poll in Nevada showed him tied for first place. So Ted Cruz seems to be doing better as a result of his brilliant announcement and the fact that he really is showing that he's a very effective candidate. He's a great speaker, a great debater, the best speaker and the best debater in the Republican Party today. Just a genius when it comes to speaking and persuasion and debating. Now, I don't know if this will continue. We'll see if it continues. The Jew hater Rand Paul is going to announce his candidacy in the next 48 hours. We'll see if he also gets a bump in the polls. If they all get bumps in the polls, then it won't have that much meaning. If all of them move up in the polls after they announce and get publicity, then it won't have that much meaning. But I'm hoping that Ted Cruz did it so effectively and so well that he gets to move up in the polls and the others don't. I hope that's what happens, God willing. Now, I have to say that Ted Cruz, if you look at the long-term picture, Ted Cruz has been saying that he thinks that military action is something that is very much on the table against Iran. He's made statements saying that, and his main advisor is John Bolton, who wrote an article openly saying, he wrote an article in the New York Nazi Times openly saying that we should bomb Iran. So that would certainly look good. It could be that Ted Cruz, if he got elected, could save us from this catastrophe, save America, Israel, and the world from this catastrophe. That's what could be at stake here. On the other hand, I wasn't thrilled with a couple of the other statements he made recently, which shows why it's so important that JTF be strong and grow. We are so necessary. It's so necessary that our voice be heard, because we're the voice of ideological truth. Cruz was asked what he thinks of the two-state solution by a self-hating Jewish reporter on CNN. And he said to her, it's up to Israel to decide if they want a one-state solution or a two-state solution. The United States cannot dictate to Israel. It's up to Israel to decide. Well, I wasn't happy with that answer. Of course it's much better than what we have now. That means he's saying he's not going to pressure Israel. He's not going to tell Israel what to do. Of course that's much better than what we have now. But of course I would have wanted something like what Mike Huckabee has said. Mike Huckabee has said, oh no, I am against creating a so-called Palestine state. I'm against Israel giving up any land under any circumstances. That's what Mike Huckabee has said. Unfortunately, Mike Huckabee has no chance. Mike Huckabee really has no chance of winning the nomination. None. But anyway, so Cruz is basically, his line is basically, we're going to support the Israeli government. We're going to support the decisions Israel makes. We're not going to pressure Israel. Of course, that's much better than what we have now. Much, far, far preferable to the disaster that we have now in the White House, of course, or to Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton's a continuation of the anti-Israel and anti-Semitic policies of Obama. She was Secretary of State for the first 4 years in Obama's presidency. She's 100% as anti-Israel and as anti-Semitic as Obama and John Kerry, no difference whatsoever. So obviously Ted Cruz and some of the other Republican candidates would be preferable to Hillary Clinton, obviously. But we were hoping for something even better than that, and I'm hoping we can influence Ted Cruz in that direction. I hope we can push him in that direction to say, hey, you believe in God? You believe in the Bible? Saying Israel can do whatever they want, that's not the biblical, that's not the answer from the Bible. The Bible, if you have a friend that wants to commit suicide, you got to stop them. If you got somebody who's crazy and doesn't understand that what they're doing is suicidal, you've got to stop them. But anyway, at least he's saying there wouldn't be any pressure on Israel. Also, when he criticized the Iran deal, I didn't like the language he used this past week. He said, we don't know all the details yet, but it looks like a dangerous agreement. We don't know all the details? This is Ted Cruz speaking. We don't know all the details. You mean we don't know enough? When they announced that they're keeping all the centrifuges, they're keeping all their nuclear infrastructure, we're going to be trusting the mullahs? And if the mullahs are lying to us, they're going to get a nuclear bomb? That's what the deal is based upon, and we don't know enough? That's not enough? That's not knowing enough? Are you kidding me? What else do you have to know? So you see, it's important that JTF be a voice, even in the Cruz campaign, even as far as Cruz is concerned. We're not going to be officially connected to Cruz's campaign. Legally, we're not supposed to be. Because we're an independent organization, and it could create problems. Cruz's campaign could get fined by the FEC if we had a connection to his campaign. So we're not going to be connected to his campaign, but we are going to lead a campaign on his behalf. And in fact, if you go to Google now and you type in Jews for Cruz, the first two things you're going to get on Google in the search engine is going to be us. The first two things you're going to get is our video and our site. So we're already Jews for Cruz. We're not Jews for Cruz. JewsForCruz.com and JewsForCruz.org, we don't have. Somebody else took that, so we don't have that. That's gone. But if you go to Google and the search engines, we're already, once people search for Jews for Cruz, they find us. And we hope to step that up and make that even more apparent in the coming months so that we could be a voice that explains why we should support Cruz and that explains to Cruz and his supporters what they should be saying about Israel. Because saying we support Netanyahu and I agree with Prime Minister Netanyahu, that is not good enough. I think Cruz is a good person, but I think he's got to be pushed in the right direction. He's being pressured from all ends, and I think he needs some pressure in the right direction too. Now, The good news is that the polls show Ted Cruz is becoming a serious contender. It didn't look that way 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, he was at 3 or 4%. Now the polls show him becoming a serious contender. Baruch Hashem. Thank God. So we've got a tough road ahead of us. If we want to save Israel and America and the world from a nuclear holocaust, it may depend on the presidential election. It might depend on that. That's what might literally be at stake. Also, I don't even have to tell you about the danger of Hillary Clinton getting into the White House and continuing to pressure Israel to freeze Jewish building in Judea and Samaria and to create a so-called Palestine state. all the other dangerous things that would happen if Hillary Clinton was elected president. Obviously, a lot is at stake here. So we're going to try to influence that situation. We're going to try, we're going to have a two-front campaign. One front is going to be the Hebrew front, trying to wake the Jews of Israel up and get them ready. And by the time the next election comes, I hope enough of them will have been awakened so that we'll be able to do something to influence what goes on in the next election in Israel, and also to put pressure on politicians in Israel. Believe it or not, the politicians in Israel, as we've mentioned before to you, politicians in Israel do go to our videos and do pay attention to our videos. And I communicate with them on Facebook, and I mean, we write back and forth to each other, some of the politicians in Israel. So we want to influence things in Israel, and we want to influence things in the United States. We're going to do everything we can to turn this situation around. And at least with us, you know that there'll be no compromise, that we're going to fight and fight the way Jews are supposed to fight for survival, and stand up the way Jews are supposed to stand up for survival. At least with us, you know, there'll be no bending and no betrayal of principles. In fact, you're going to see, even this week, which is the Passover holiday, the Pesach holiday, and Chag Sameach to all of our great members, happy Passover. Even on this Passover holiday week, you're going to see us releasing videos. You're going to see us releasing videos in Hebrew and in English on the issue of Iran, in terms of the presidential election. You're going to see, this week already, you're going to see videos coming out, and we're really gearing up. I mean, this is going to be an all-out campaign. And if you remember last time with the Mitt Romney, Barack Hussein Obama campaign, I mean, we got a lot of views. We really made quite a splash on YouTube last time. This time, I think we have a chance to do much more. I think we have a shot at doing much more, because I really think Ted Cruz supporters are much more enthusiastic than the Romney supporters were. So I think we have a real shot here at making a difference. But we need your help. We need to do this as a team, because so much is at stake. Our hope is not yet lost. Od lo avda tikvatenu. Our hope is not yet lost. Those are the words in the song Hatikva, in the hymnon, the national anthem of Israel. Od lo avda tikvatenu, it says, our hope is not yet lost. That's what the Jews sang after the Holocaust, and when they returned to Israel, they wanted to say to the world, our hope is not yet lost. Don't think because you murdered 6 million of our brothers and sisters that we've lost all hope. We still haven't lost hope. That's the national anthem of Israel. And we want to say, JTF says, our hope is not yet lost. Of course not. We still have Hashem, we have a God that will protect us and save us if we do what's right. And we've got to push the Jews to do what's right, God willing, and hopefully push things in the right direction in America with the presidential election. So you already know what's at stake. I don't want to go on speaking about this, because you're people who listen to this program every week, you're already experts. You already know backwards and forwards everything that I'm saying. But there is new news with the polls and with Ted Cruz moving up and with the new Iran agreement. So there was some new news, some of it bad and some of it good. But all of it proving our point again that we must get stronger, and we must wake people up and reach people as quickly as possible. And so I'm going to ask you to do a number of things for us. Number one, pray for our success. Please pray. Prayer is very important to us. Secondly, when you see us putting Hebrew or English videos up, even if you don't speak Hebrew, when you see us putting Hebrew or English videos up, help us promote those videos. Liking, favoriting, doing whatever you can on Facebook, on YouTube. Help us promote those videos when you see us putting videos up. Of course, the English ones, it's easier for you to promote because you understand them. But do what you can for both. Do what you can to help us promote those videos. That's the second thing. So prayer is the first. Helping promote the videos is the second. The third thing, our news page. We have a great news page. We have two great news pages. One in Hebrew, hayamin.org. One in English, jtf.org. I think everybody listening to this program speaks English. You definitely should join the English language news page, jtf.org. And you should go to that news page every day. Several times a day, you're going to see updates, great articles that Shlomo is putting up there. Let's push that news page forward and get as many people going to that news page as possible. Make that news page a focus in the upcoming presidential campaign and in the campaign to save Israel from this nuclear catastrophe. So join that news page as well. And don't just join, comment on it and check it out. Check it out every day. Make sure to check it because there are, I guarantee you, you're going to see things on that news page every single day that you won't see anywhere else. So that's three things so far, right? Prayer, helping with the videos, joining and helping with the news page, and checking the news page. Okay, so that's three things so far. And the fourth and final and most important, of course, is that we need financial support to reach people. The more support we get, obviously, the more people we can reach. Checks, money orders, cash donations made out to our post office box, they make a difference. The more support we get, the more people we can reach, the stronger we are, the better it is for Israel, for America, for the Jewish people, for the world. Every contribution makes a difference. If you want to send checks or money orders or cash donations to the post office box, very, very important. Or if you prefer, if you think it's more convenient to do it online with your credit card, you can do that as well. You just go to the donate button on our Hebrew main page, which is hayamin.org. You go to hayamin.org. On top, there's a donate button in English. You click on the button, and in a couple of minutes, very easily and conveniently, you can make a contribution online. Whatever's more convenient for you, it makes no difference to us. It helps the cause tremendously. Whatever's more convenient for you, please make it your business to help us, because this is a critical time. So much is at stake. So much is at stake. If only people understood that billions of years in the next world are at stake for people, for the judgment we're all going to receive, for the time we're in. I mean, we're in this world 70 years, 80 years, 100 years if we're lucky. If someone lives to 100 years, they're really lucky. The little time we're in this world and the judgment that we receive for the time we're here, every second should be precious. The judgment we receive for the time we're here will affect us billions of years in the future and even beyond billions, trillions of years, I mean, forever. Our eternal future. Eternity is a very long time. If you believe in the Torah, and if you believe in the Tanakh, in the Bible, that's what it says. Our judgment will be for eternity. And God does judge us based upon what God is going to ask us. Believe me, He's going to ask us, what did you do when you knew that this danger existed? What did you do when you knew that they were endangering my people in the Holy Land and endangering the country that I created in the land of Israel in fulfillment of biblical prophecy? What did you do when you saw this? I hope that all of our great JTFers will have a good answer at that time. Let's work together as a team. Let's work together as a team and let's make a difference, because this is a very crucial time for Israel, for America, and for the world. We can make a difference if we work together. We can. I'm hoping, God willing, I'm not promising you success. I can't promise you success because I don't know what's going to be. I'm not a prophet. But I do think we have a chance to wake people up. I think we have a chance to try to make a difference. Can we actually change the results of the presidential election and these big, huge things that I don't know. That's quite a challenge. But I do think we have an obligation to do whatever we can do. I don't know if we can make that big a change, but we have to try our best to do as much as we can. And maybe if we do as much as we can, Hashem, God, will look at what we're doing and He'll say, they're trying their best for their sake. Because they're trying their best, I'm going to make sure that things go right. I'm going to make sure that things go well and that the events that occur will be events that will be positive. God does that sometimes. Sometimes for the sake of the few, He saves the many. So let's bear that in mind. Okay, a lot is at stake here. Let's go now to our questions from our great JTFers. And we start off with Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, when someone makes a caricature of Mohammed, Muslims get pissed off. Your thoughts, unquote. Well, on the one hand, obviously, anything you say about Mohammed the things you could say about Mohammed in attacking him, let's say you attack him as a pedophile, He did marry a six-year-old girl and had sex with her when she was 9 years old when he was in his 50s. So he was a pedophile. He was a rapist. He was a mass murderer. He was a Nazi who believed in genocide against all non-Muslims. He was a terrorist. He was a thief. He was a liar. I mean, he was every evil thing you can think of under the sun, just pure evil. And then they get hysterical when you even draw a picture of him. You're not allowed to draw a picture of Muhammad. You're not allowed to draw a picture of him. So, that's absurd. Obviously, it's absurd. On the one hand, we laugh at it because it's absurd, because we know how evil he is and how much he deserves all the contempt that anybody could ever have for any human being. He deserves it because he's so evil. On the other hand, I'm a little bit jealous of the Muslims. Yes, I'm jealous of them. You know why? Because when someone does something that offends their religion, they're ready to give their lives, they're ready to kill, they're ready to do whatever it takes. They will not allow anybody to do anything that offends their religion. And how I wish that my fellow Jews had that attitude of zealous defense of Judaism, the way the Muslims zealously defend their evil false religion. The Jews have the true religion and don't zealously defend it. The Muslims have the lying false religion and zealously defend it. So I'm a little jealous and a little frustrated when I see that. I hope that's not too confusing. So on the one hand, it's absurd that they're so concerned about Muhammad. He was such an evil animal. On the other hand, I'm jealous because they're willing to do for a false, lying religion what we're not willing to do for a true, for the truth, for the actual, for the Bible, the actual Word of God. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And we go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you explain why Passover is 8 days? Thanks, have a great Passover for you and your family, unquote. Okay, Joe, thank you for the good wishes, and the same to you, of course. Passover is 8 days, first of all, because in the Bible it's 7 days. Let's start off with that. In the Bible, and in the land of Israel, it's actually 7 days. It's 8 days outside of the land of Israel. Let me explain what I mean. In Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel, Passover 7 days. That's from the Torah, from the commandments in the Torah on how we celebrate Chag HaPesach. Why is it 7 days? Because on the first day, God passed over the homes of the Hebrews when he was killing the firstborn of Egypt. And he passed over, the Jews put blood from the lamb, put the lamb's blood on the doorposts, and God passed over their houses and only killed the firstborn of Egypt and didn't touch the firstborn of the Hebrews. So that was the first day of Passover. Then, on the seventh day, 7 days later, on the seventh day, we have Kriyat Yam Suf. Kriyat Yam Suf is the crossing of the Red Sea. When the Red Sea parts, the parting of the Red Sea, actually. Kriyat Yam Suf means the parting of the Red Sea. Where God parts the waters in the Red Sea so that the Jews can get to the other side, and then when the Egyptians pursue after them, go into the Red Sea in hot pursuit against them, the waters come crashing down on the Egyptians and drown them. So we see that incredible miracle, that fantastic miracle on the seventh day of Passover. So the first day is God passing over the homes of the Hebrews in the plague of killing the firstborn of Egypt. And the seventh day is because of the passing through the Red Sea and the miracle of the splitting of the Red Sea and the saving of the Jews through that great miracle. Now, that's in the land of Israel. That explains why it's 7 days according to the Torah and why it's 7 days in the land of Israel. It's commemorating those two great events. But in the Galut, in the exile, we have 2 days for every 1 day holiday. Every time there's a 1 day holiday, and the holiday has to be a Shabbaton holiday. Shabbaton means that there are things that we're not allowed to do on the holiday. We're not allowed to work. We're not allowed to do certain types of work, 39 types of work. And it's called Melacha. And we're not allowed to do, there's certain things we're not allowed to do. 39 different specific things that we're not allowed to do on the Sabbath. On the holidays, on Chagim, it's a little less strict than Shabbat. It's not as strict as Shabbat. But because there's some similarities in a lot of the rules, it's called the Shabbaton anyway. It's called something that's similar to a Sabbath. It's like a mini Sabbath. And in holidays like that, when they're one day in the land of Israel, like the first day of Passover and the seventh day of Passover are one day holidays in the land of Israel, in the Galut, in the exile, they're 2 days. So the first 2 days of Passover outside of Israel are a holiday. And the last 2 days of Passover outside of Israel are a holiday. And Shavuot is a one-day holiday in Israel, but it's a two-day holiday outside of Israel. And the same is true for other holidays like Sukkot and Simchat Torah. So we have the rule that a one-day holiday in Israel is a two-day holiday outside of Israel. There are many reasons why one-day holidays, I've done videos explaining this, why one-day holidays are turned into two-day holidays outside the land of Israel. But it's because of that rule that Passover is, instead of 7 days, because it's 2 days at the end, it's the total is 8 days outside of Israel. That's why it's 8 days. Because the last part of the holiday, which commemorates the splitting of the Red Sea, is commemorated for 2 days, a two-day holiday instead of a one-day holiday when it's outside of Israel. I hope that's not too confusing. I hope I explained it as clearly as possible. Thank you, Joe. And we go to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, "In Islam, you can pay blood money, quote-unquote, compensation for murdering, but you have to get your hand cut off for stealing," unquote. Yeah, of course. I mean, it's a religion that makes no sense, and the rules were created arbitrarily by a lunatic in the desert who was a complete illiterate. Muhammad didn't know how to read or write. He was a complete illiterate. And the rules are cruel and evil, immoral and illogical and irrational in every way. All of the rules are stolen from Judaism, from the Torah, from the Talmud. Some of them are from the Talmud. Some of them are from Christian scriptures. In other words, Muhammad stole from the Jews and the Christians. He stole from them. Distorted what the Jews and the Christians wrote. Created a religion out of it. A very cruel and monstrous religion out of it. A bloody religion out of it. And the rules, as what you're mentioning, they're irrational. They're completely irrational and make no sense whatsoever. Very true. Thank you, Smash Islam. And we go to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "One, what is Ted Cruz's opinion on Jonathan Pollard?" Unquote. I don't know. I hope that he favors freeing Jonathan Pollard. I'd be really, really disappointed if he didn't. Two, okay, Binyamin writes now, quote, "Two, if he's against Pollard, would JTF still support him enthusiastically or as a lesser of the evils?" Unquote. If he's against Pollard, I would consider not supporting him at all. That would be very, very bad if he was against Pollard. That would really, really lower my opinion of him terribly if he was against Pollard. So I hope that's not true. And three, "Speak about the city government of Jerusalem," unquote. Well, the city government of Jerusalem is mostly, it's just a mishmash of Haredi parties, the so-called religious parties, some secular parties. The mayor is secular. And the Arabs also run, and they're also represented. So it's just a mishmash, except you have a larger religious representation than you have in Israel as a whole, because Jerusalem is more religious than the rest of the state of Israel. And it tends to be more right-wing, phony right, than the rest of Israel. It's the phony right. All of them are phony right. You have more of that than you have in the rest of Israel, because Jerusalem is also more right-wing. The voters in Jerusalem are more right-wing and more religious than in the rest of the state of Israel. So it tends to be a government of more phony right and of more people who come from so-called religious parties than the rest of Israel. And Binyamin now writes, "Four, what party would JTF support in a Jerusalem municipal election?" Unquote. I don't know of any party that we would want to support. If there's a party that I think will do good for the Jewish people, and for the state of Israel, and for the land of Israel, then of course I would support it. But I don't know right now if such a party exists. I don't know of one that exists. If one does come up that, I think will be beneficial, then obviously we would be happy to support such a party. Thank you, Binyamin. We go now to angry Chinese Kahanist who writes, and I quote, as you know by now, the UN says Israel is the worst violator of human rights, unquote. Yeah, absolutely. Good point. And in fact, I think about 40% of the UN resolutions in, or 38% or 40%, maybe I'm understating it, are against Israel. Against this tiny little pipsqueak country that you can't even see on the map. The UN is so anti-Semitic and so anti-Israel. And such twisted, vicious Jew hatred from that organization. You would think by now the Jews would be against the UN as a response. No! Jews raise money for UNICEF, and the UJA gives to UNICEF. The United Jihad Appeal, the UJA is the United Jihad Appeal. They give money to UNICEF, and they help organizations that help UNICEF and help the UN. I mean, just, it's so sick. It's so sick. Yes, the UN is very anti-Israel, very anti-Semitic, vicious in every way, and the Jewish establishment organizations and the Jewish leftists and the self-hating Jews, they continue to support the UN. They always support all of their worst enemies. Thank you, angry Chinese Kahanist. And we move on now to Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, please say this in a sand ape accent. It is Middle Eastern History Month. Inshallah, you Zionist infidels will all be exterminated. Okay. So it's Middle Eastern History Month, and that means it's time to exterminate the Zionist infidels. Okay. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, please discuss Suha Arafag's stint as Miss Palestine. Okay. Suha Arafat, who was the so-called wife of Yasser Arafat, even though they never actually consummated their marriage. Arafat was a notorious homosexual who had AIDS and died of AIDS and used to have sex with his bodyguards, and just a grotesquely disgusting, nauseating piece of subhuman filth. But anyway, he married Suha Arafat, and she was supposed to be Miss Palestine. The only problem is she looked like Miss Frankenstein. I mean, if anyone sees a picture of her, and she was supposed to be the most beautiful example there of the women of what they call Palestine there. Of course, there is no Palestine. But she's supposed to be the most beautiful example of these Arab women there, and ugh. Anyway, but Arafat was so in love with her. Yeah, right. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, and I quote, the unlamented Alex Ode, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. Lewinsky Stinks wants me to discuss Alex Ode. Alex Ode was a spokesman for the PLO terrorists in California on the west coast of the United States. He opened an office in California. He praised the PLO terrorists, praised Arafat, defended them. When Leon Klinghoffer, a Jew in a wheelchair, were shot to death and thrown overboard by PLO terrorists who hijacked the Achille Lauro ship on Arafat's orders, of course. Arafat said at the time that his widow, actually, that it wasn't the PLO terrorist that shot and murdered Leon Klinghoffer. It was his widow who did it so she could collect the life insurance. That's what Arafat said. Alex Ode repeated this odious lie on television in Los Angeles. And shortly after that, when he went to his office to open his door, his office was booby-trapped with a bomb, and it blew him up, and he was killed. So that's the story of Alex Ode. And, you know, the FBI has always wanted to blame Jews for what happened to Alex Ode. I don't know if Jews were responsible. All I know is that Alex Ode is certainly someone that we don't mourn over. We certainly don't shed any tears over the killing of this vile PLO Nazi terrorist mass murdering spokesman for pure evil. Lewinsky Stinks now asks for a comment on the Islamic concept of rectal jihad. Thank you. Unquote. A rectal jihad, this is a very important Islamic concept. the Muslim terrorists have to engage in rectal jihad. This is what they engage in before they go off to murder infidels, which means basically that they have anal sex before they go off to murder infidels. Isn't that sounds like a religion that would come from God, doesn't it? That God would be ordering things like this, right? Doesn't that sound like a religion that would come from God? Oh, what a sick, evil world we live in. What a sick, evil world we live in. Rectal jihad. And you know, if I didn't know any better, I would think rectal jihad is what all the Jewish leaders engage in. You know, when they go in front of black Jew haters and Arab Jew haters and all the other Jew haters, I thought that they're the ones who engage in rectal jihad. If I didn't know any better, that's what I would have thought. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we go now to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, talk about Barry and Shifra Hoffman and Mayor Ettinger, unquote. Shifra Hoffman is a wonderful tzaddeket, a wonderful Jewish saintly woman who for many years has been a loyal follower, a devoted loyal follower of Moreno Verabbeinu Harab Meir Kahana Zecher Tzaddik VeKadosh Livracha, our great teacher and leader, Rabbi Kahana. Shifra was always active in the movement, very active for many, many years, ever since I was a little kid, I know her. When I say a little kid, I mean when I was a teenager, in my early teens, 14, 15 years old, I first met her. She was always very active, always very involved in the movement, always very helpful to the movement, always very helpful to Rabbi Kahana. She made Aliyah together with her wonderful husband, Reuven, Alav HaShalom, he should rest in peace. Unfortunately, Reuven passed away a couple of years ago, I think it was, he passed away. He was another wonderful person, Reuven, her husband. And unfortunately, Shifra, a little bit over a year ago, lost her son, Barry Hoffman. And I, in fact, say, in the beginning of these shows, I say, elevating the soul, I speak about Reuven Hoffman, who is the husband of Shifra Hoffman, and Barry Hoffman, who is her son. I always include them, if you notice, in the beginning of these programs, I include them in my statements about elevating people's souls. I always include them, because Shifra is one of the most precious Jewish activists that I've ever known, a wonderful human being. And she suffered a terrible tragedy. I don't have to tell people. You can imagine there's no nightmare worse than losing your child. And her son was, I mean, he was an adult already when he died, but it was a terrible, terrible tragedy. And we have to pray for her. And she's a wonderful Jewish woman. We pray for her, and we pray for the soul of her son and for the soul of her husband. Meir Ettinger, Dr. Dan Wright asks about Meir Ettinger. Meir Ettinger is Rabbi Kahana's grandson. And of course, he's a Jewish hero, and he's fighting very hard for the Jewish people, and we love and respect him, and he is one of the great Jewish leaders of tomorrow. He's a young guy, and I think he's 20, 21 years old now. I don't recall exactly how old, but I think something like that. And he's fighting for the Jewish people, and he's certainly one of our leaders, one of our future leaders, God willing. Dr. Dan now writes, two, talk about the Maccabees, unquote. The Maccabees is a singing group from Yeshiva University. I don't know that much about them. There's one thing that they did that I don't like. Call me picky or call me whatever, but there's one thing I don't like. I don't know that much about them, but one thing I know that they went to the White House in 2011 to get an award for Jewish American History Month, or whatever you want to call it, from Barack Hussein Obama, the Muslim Jew hater. I also would have gone if somebody had offered me to invite me to the White House. I would have gone, but I would have told Obama off there. I would have said, you're a Jew hater, and I would have said, you're a disgrace. I mean, I would have gone there to make a scene, you know, and they never would have invited me again, but I would have said, you're a Jew hater, and I'll never shake your hand. I'll never shake your hand. Your hand has too much blood on it. That's what I would have said to Obama. Yimach shmo v'zichro. But anyway, but they went there and they were very nice to Obama, and you know, and I don't have to tell you, that turns me off. That I don't like. I have not you know, I'm not really familiar with their music. I don't know that much about it. I know they have one song about home, which they describe as Jerusalem. That's a good song. That's a good theme. But other than that, I don't know very much about them. Dr. Dan now writes, 3, can we blame Pharaoh for having national pride? Hitler too. Chag Sameach, which means happy holiday. Well, yes, certainly we can. If his definition of national pride is murdering, enslaving, and torturing to death the Jewish people, if that's what his national pride is, then we can blame him, absolutely. That's a monstrous version of national pride. Of course we can. For that we can blame him. Anyway, thank you, Dr. Dan. And we go now to PMN, who writes, and I quote, Kahana urged Jews to seek self-respect over being loved. Please explain and provide a quick how-to guide. Is self-effacing humor ever appropriate? Unquote. Well, obviously, Rabbi Kahana was saying, what Rabbi Kahana said makes perfect sense. You can't. Jews are always, they want to be loved so badly because they've been hated for so long by so many people. No people has been hated as much as the Jews by so many people for so long. And so the Jews desperately want to be loved. They desperately want people to love them and accept them. And, you know, this is a mental illness. And so they do suicidal things to try to curry favor with their enemies. You will never, never get the respect of anyone if you don't have self-respect. That's what Rabbi Kahana used to say. If you want to get respect from others, you must first have self-respect. And Rabbi Kahana was respected more than any Jewish leader that I've ever known. As controversial as he was, and as much as he was denounced by all the self-hating Jewish leaders, all the Jewish establishment garbage so-called leaders, as much as they condemned him, I saw how much he was respected by, you know, when he would go to Washington, for instance, and would meet with senators and congressmen. I mean, they respected, even though he was politically toxic. He was so controversial, and all the big Jewish money people said, oh, he's terrible, oy, oy, oy. You know, so the smart thing to do is stay away from him. But you could see how even people who are enemies respected him. Because you couldn't help but respect him. He was such an honorable and courageous and brilliant and logical leader. You couldn't help but respect him. And Rabbi Kahana wanted the Jewish people to be a people that would be honorable and courageous and brave and truthful and a voice of morality, willing to sail against the wind and swim against the tide for what's right. Because that's the real role of the Jewish people in this world. PMN then asks if self-effacing humor is ever appropriate. Of course, sometimes it's appropriate. But there's a difference between self-effacing humor and self-hating humor. The self-hating Jewish comedians of today, all they do is self-hating humor. That's terrible. Self-effacing humor here and there is perfectly appropriate. You know, it's hard not to want to have a sense of humor because the situation of the Jewish people is so pathetic. I mean, you look at this disgusting animal, Schmuck Schumer, who's about to become now that Harry Reid is retiring as the head of the Democrats in the Senate, the new head of the Democrats in the Senate, God help us, is going to be Schmuck Schumer. What a disaster. What a disaster. He is a poster child. He's a poster boy for anti-Semitism of the worst type. Just the lowest and the worst. Anyway, there's a difference. In Hollywood, they don't have self-effacing humor toward Jews. It's self-hating. It's anti-Semitic. And, you know, if the humor expresses contempt and hatred for your own background and your people, especially when you have so much to be proud of, that is something that's not appropriate. If it's self-effacing humor in a different sense, but not self-hating, self-effacing humor but with self-respect, then of course that's perfectly fine and appropriate and even something that's laudable. Thank you, PMN. We go now to EB22, who writes, and I quote, please discuss the religious freedom laws passed in Indiana and Arkansas, the uproar against them, and the responses by the two states' governments, unquote. Well, first of all, the laws simply state that for religious reasons, you can't be compelled to do something against your religious beliefs. Like, for instance, they issued fines and closed down bakeries and pizza shops because they didn't want to cater at sodomite weddings. We're not allowed to cater to sodomite weddings or attend sodomite weddings. And the law is basically saying, now you must do this. You must accept it. You must do it. You require to. So the religious freedom laws were intended to protect people from that type of government oppression. Because now we have gay oppression, gay persecution of religious people. That's what's happening in this country now. And these laws were intended to protect people who have religious belief and a religious conscience from having to engage in this type of disgusting legitimization of evil. Tragically, under pressure, right away they buckled under. Governor Mike Pence, what a wimp. And the wimpy governor of Arkansas, I don't even remember what his name is. Hutchison? I don't even remember what his name is. Complete wimp. Right away they caved in. Right away caved in to the so-called gay lobby. I mean, who are these people? Screw them. Who the hell are these people? To make demands. No, you must support us. You must. You can't. And what, are you kidding me? Who the hell are these sick people? I mean, the goal of these people, it's bad enough that what they're doing, the creator of the universe has defined as a toiva, an abomination. Then they demand that they shove it down everybody's throat, their nasty lifestyle. We have to... Every time you open up the television, every time you open up your computer, every time you have to see pictures of their weddings where two men are kissing, you want to throw up. We have to see things that make us want to vomit. I mean, that's not bad enough, and I think that that's terrible. That's not bad enough. Now we got to accept it. We got to cater their weddings and participate in this. I mean, if I have a kosher restaurant and I don't want some transvestite coming into my restaurant, a kosher family restaurant, I'm not allowed to say, wait a minute now, this is not, you're not dressed appropriately, I don't want this, I don't like the, or some so-called gays coming into the restaurant and acting like disgusting perverts in my restaurant, I'm not allowed to say I don't want them in my restaurant? I mean, what type of, this is government oppression, this is fascism, this is government oppression. And that's what we have now. And right away, like cheap fans, all the Republicans in Indiana and Arkansas caved in. Right away they folded like cheap fans. Right away caved in. What a disgrace. What a disgrace. The one thing about Ted Cruz that I like is that on some issues like this, I hope that he won't cave in. He seems to be a little bit stronger than the other pathetic politicians. He's not as strong as I would like to see, but still, he's stronger than the other pathetic politicians. So I'm hoping he won't cave in on this. And he'll set the proper example. Thank you, EB. We go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Rahm Emanuel was out campaigning at a local subway station. I looked at him and said, I don't shake hands with self-hating Jews. All he did was snicker, unquote. Chicago Jew, I am so proud of you. Yishar Koach. Yishar Koach means more power to you. Really, really, congratulations. That is wonderful. I've done that to politicians, these self-hating Jewish politicians in New York so many times. I've said things to them. Oh, do they hate? They all know me. Of course, here they all know me and they all hate me. But no, that is wonderful. For those of you who don't know, Rahm Emanuel is the self-hating Jewish mayor of Chicago who served under the Clintons and served under Barack Hussein Obama. And he was Barack Hussein Obama's chief of staff. Of course, Hillary Clinton now, by the way, her chief of staff is going to be Huma Abedin from the Muslim Brotherhood. The wife of Anthony the Wiener. Oh, what a nightmare. What a nightmare we're in for. That's going to be his chief. That's going to be her chief of staff. She's going to be running the White House. We're going to have the Muslim Brotherhood running the White House if Hillary Clinton gets elected. But Rahm Emanuel, he worked for the Clintons and he worked for Obama and he worked for, you know, all the evil people. Now he's the mayor of Chicago doing more evil. And hopefully, you know, unfortunately, it looks like he's going to get reelected. Unfortunately. I'm very proud of you, Chicago Jew, for what you did. You certainly deserve congratulations for what you did. I'm very proud of you. And we go now to Righteous Indian Gentile, who writes, and I quote, "I think there's going to be a grand clash in the Middle East for Mecca between Iran and Saudi Arabia," unquote. Well, there already is. I mean, they're always fighting among themselves. The Muslims are always fighting among themselves. This is nothing new. This is throughout history. They will fight and kill each other. There's a saying, there's no honor among thieves. There's another saying, if you shake hands with a Muslim, you have to count your fingers after you shake hands with a Muslim. I mean, you can't, these people, they, Muslims know that you can't trust other Muslims. They know that. And of course, this is with the Sunnis and the Shiites and the, you know, Wahhabis and the Ayatollahs and the Mullahs and the Imams and just all insanity. All insanity. But the real danger now, if Iran gets that nuclear bomb, which is where we're headed now, unless something happens, unless something miraculous happens to stop it, if Iran, God forbid, gets that nuclear bomb, we're headed for a very dangerous situation in the Middle East. Very dangerous. Because I think that their main focus is not going to be on Saudi Arabia with that bomb. I think their main focus is going to be on Israel and the United States. Thank you, Righteous Indian Gentile. And we go now to Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, "What happened during the Lavon Affair?" Unquote. The Lavon Affair happened in 1954 in Egypt. The Israeli Mossad recruited Egyptian Jews to bomb Egyptian targets. Why? They wanted to create instability in Egypt and show that there's terrorism and instability and bombs going off in Egypt in order to persuade the British, who were still in Egypt. Egypt was part of the British Empire. And the British still had troops in Egypt. And the left-wing Ben-Gurion Israeli socialist government didn't want the British to leave Egypt. They wanted the British to stay, even though that actually is bad for Israel and bad for the Jews. But, you know, in their pathetic way of thinking, they wanted the British to stay there, even though the British did terrible things to the Jews. In any event, they wanted to prevent the British from leaving, especially leaving the Suez Canal. And they felt that if bombs are going off and there's instability, it would persuade the British to keep their soldiers there, to keep their troops in Egypt and not leave. That was the intention. So they set off bombs. Unfortunately, people got caught. In the end, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that 5 Jews were killed in the end. I know 2 were captured and executed by the Egyptians, tortured and executed by the Egyptians. Another 2 committed suicide after being captured because they knew they were going to be tortured. They didn't want to go through the torture, and they knew they were going to be murdered anyway. So that's 4. And then one of them was blown up by one of the bombs, accidentally blown up by one of the bombs. So 5 Jews lost their lives to this stupid little intrigue. You know, we don't need this. We don't need the British, and we don't need to worry about we're going to have this Arab government instead of that Arab government and this Muslim government instead of that Muslim government. That's just nonsense. If we have a good Jewish government in Israel, I guarantee you we can take care of any Arab government that comes into power, any Muslim government that comes into power, and any of the states surrounding Israel. We can take care of that problem if we have a good Jewish government. Hashem, God, will help us. So the Lavon Affair is an example of the type of calamitous policies that you get from self-hating Jews who don't have a clue as to what the destiny of the Jewish people is. Thank you, Da Vinci. We go now to Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, is it wrong to open the casket of a Jew to make sure that the correct person is being buried and was given tahara?" Unquote. Tahara is purification, the purification process before somebody's buried. Well, of course, you don't want to open the casket of a Jew. You don't want to do something like that. That's disturbing the dead. Once it's been sealed, you don't want to disturb the dead. However, There may be times when sometimes you have to. I don't know exactly. I don't know exactly what the rule or what the limit is. That's something that rabbis who are bekiim, who are expert in this area, would have to be consulted on. Rabbis would have to be consulted on that question. I don't know at what point it would be appropriate to. I assume that you want to know the correct person is being buried. I assume that is very important. But again, a rabbinic scholar would have to be consulted before doing anything like that. Thank you, Maimonides. We go now to Kalman ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, can you teach us something from the Talmud? Thank you, unquote. Okay, from the Talmud. Okay, how about something short and sweet? It says in Avot, okay, Perek Aleph, and it's Tet Vav. Avot is the book of the fathers, the saying of the fathers. It says, Emor me'at va'ase harbe. Emor me'at va'ase harbe. That means say little and do a lot. Now this is something that would be very good advice for Pipi Netanyoyo. If Pipi Netanyoyo would say very little and just send in the, you know, instead of making speeches to Congress and doing the other things he's doing, and explaining over and over again how bad this is, and, you know, instead of doing that, send in the Israeli Air Force. You know what I would have done? I would have said, I'm going to make a speech to the Congress, just like Pipi did. I would have said, I'm going to make a speech to the Congress. And then everybody would assume, oh, he's not going to do anything before he makes a speech. He's going to first speak and explain things. Before the speech, when they least expected, I would have sent in those airplanes and bombed. I would have warmed up those jets and bombed the Iranian nuclear bomb-making program. I'd make sure 2 weeks before then to start the bombing and blast away at that Iranian nuclear bomb-making program. Then I would have gone to Congress to explain why I did it after it's already done. After it's too late and it's already done and I've destroyed 60 or 70% of their program and it's been set back and they're all complaining and screaming and yelling, then I would go on Fox and then I would go to the Congress and then I'd go all over the place to explain why I did it. But first I would do something and then I'd explain. In other words, all PP ever does, all BBPP ever does is talk. He never does anything. I would do first. I would first do it. It would be an accomplished fact. There'd be nothing they could do about it. And then I would explain why I did it. And I think I'd make a very good case as to why it had to be done. That's how I would do it. And I believe, even though there'd be condemnation and they'd be screaming and yelling, I still believe we'd get more respect that way, far more respect that way, than the way Bibi does it. And again, that's advice from the Talmud. Advice from the Talmud. Emor me'at va'aseh harbe. Say little and do a lot. That's good advice for an Israeli prime minister. Thank you, Kalman. And we go now to Confederate Kahanis, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, what do you think of the saying, God won't give you more than you can handle, unquote. I believe it's absolutely true. That's one of the, you know, one of the things that is true about the Torah. They say, wow, you have 613 commandments. The Jews have 613 commandments. How can you possibly do all 613 commandments? Impossible. It's not impossible. If it was impossible, God wouldn't give it to us to do. It's not impossible. If God gave it to us to do, it means we can do it. It's possible to do it if we try hard enough. It can be done. And of course, if there are sins and if mistakes are made, God gives us ways to repent and to ask for forgiveness. We have ways of doing that, which, I mean, everybody does commit sin. All of us do commit sins, have committed sins, and we have ways to repent, at least for many sins. And there are some sins that are unforgivable. But, you know, we do have ways of dealing with that. God does not give us a challenge that we can't overcome. Doesn't mean it's easy. It could be very hard. But it is doable. It is doable. Otherwise, God wouldn't give it to us. He wouldn't give us something. What would be the point of him giving us something that's impossible for us to achieve? To saying, I want you to do this when he knows that there's no way we could possibly do it. Why? What would be the point of this? What would be accomplished by that? God is a loving God. He wouldn't do that. That would be very cruel. There's no way that that would ever happen. Confederate Kahanis now writes, does at-will employment only apply to white males, unquote? Well, for those of you who are not familiar with the term at-will employment means that you can be fired for any reason, dismissed for any reason, no explanation needed. They want to fire you, they just fire you, and that's it. Obviously, white males, I think white females also, Confederate Kahanis, they're also victimized by this. I think Asians are victimized by this. I don't think it's only white males. I think it's white males are probably the first target, but I think white males, Asians, Jews, especially Jews, and white women. I think that whites in general, whites, Asians, Jews, are targets of all types of discrimination now in our society. Because the people who achieve and the people who accomplish and the people who work hard are punished for doing the right thing and for working hard. They're punished for that. And the evil, lazy people are rewarded for being evil, lazy, nasty people who don't work hard in school, who have low IQs because they don't get education, they don't do anything, they sit around playing basketball all day or smoking crack or, you know, just wasting their time in the housing projects, listening to rap and hip-hop and another nasty noise. Instead of studying, instead of applying themselves, instead of having discipline, instead of considering their future, instead of doing their homework and going to school and attending class, they don't do any of that. They don't want to be bothered with any of that. And so they have poor grades, they're uneducated, they're stupid, they have low IQs, and they're rewarded for this type of behavior. They're the first hired and never fired. So, you know, that's the society we live in. Everything's upside down, Confederate Kahanis. If you want to know how it works, very simple rule. Everything's the opposite of whatever is logical. Everything's upside down in our world today. Okay? The good people are punished, the bad people are rewarded by our government and by major corporations. Everything is the opposite of what it should be. It's the opposite of righteous, truthful, and logical behavior. That's what we've come to. Woe unto he that makes light darkness and darkness light. We've come to a generation where light is darkness and darkness is light, where they turn everything upside down. But we don't despair because God doesn't accept this, and we've got to fight the good fight to fight for justice. When we see injustice, we've got to fight for justice. Thank you, Confederate Kahanis. We go now to Ephraim ben Noach, who writes, and I quote, what do you know of and think of Rabbi Amram Vaknin and his blood moon theory? Thanks, Chaim. Hope you had a good Passover, unquote. Things may be ascribed to him by people who believe in the blood moon theory, but I don't think Harav Amram Vaknin, who is a Haredi rabbi from the land of Israel, I don't think he even knows about the people who were ascribing this to him. He said that bad things are going to happen to the Jews. He said bad things is a very dangerous time and bad things are going to happen to the Jewish people. He made that prediction. I'm not a rabbi, and I can tell you that there's a period of tremendous danger for the Jewish people and for the world and for all good people. I'm not a rabbi, but I know that. I mean, I can see that with my own eyes. So, you know, I certainly don't think that this is prophecy. I don't believe we have prophecy. Since the destruction of the Second Temple, there is no prophecy anymore. And the next time there'll be prophecy is when the Third Temple is built. That's when we're going to have prophecy again. So we don't have nevuah, prophecy, anymore. But we do have people who can logically see and predict things, not because God is speaking. Prophecy means God is actually communicating and telling you. Not because God is speaking to you and telling you, but because you logically look at the world and understand God's rules and understand the way things work and understand where we're going. And from that, you can make logical predictions of what's likely to come. I don't know enough about Harav Amram Vaknin's predictions to tell you. The fact that we're entering a period of great danger, I think it should be obvious, and I think it should be self-apparent to everybody. Thank you, Ephraim. And we go now to Maim Koran, who writes, and I quote, "Good evening, Chaim. Whatever happened to the idea of running a JTF slate in the Israeli elections, and how is the public reacting to the JTF news site?" Unquote. Okay. It didn't work, the idea of running a JTF slate in the Israeli elections. We were in touch with certain people in the Knesset. We did actually, and they didn't want it because of our position on the Temple Mount and various other issues. So it fell through. It didn't work. It didn't work in this past election. We're hoping in the next election that we will be able to run a slate together with other people. We can't run by ourselves. By ourselves, we'll never win. We don't have enough money to run by ourselves. But we hope that we'll be able to run in conjunction with other people in the next election. We're hoping, at least. This time it did not work. It fell through, unfortunately. How is the public reacting to the JTF news site? I wish it was better, because it's such a great news site. The people who go to it, I think, like it. I think people are very pleased with the news site, but I want it to be a big news site, you know, a major news site. Obviously, we don't have the money to promote it like other people do. And we don't have the media on our side, and we don't have the advantages other people have, so we've got to fight the hard way. We've got to fight uphill the hard way. But I think the more people that are exposed to it, I think the more people are going to like it, because it is a great news site. It is a great news site. But we're not at all satisfied. We want it to become a really big mass news site. That's our dream. We want the English and the Hebrew to become mass news sites, God willing. Thank you, Maim Koran. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week.